This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
History in Five Songs with host Martin Popoff, a production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Hello once again. Welcome back to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcasts. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this always vast and expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, this is episode 224. I'm calling this sequencing. I thought, let's try to get some more words in there. Good, bad, ugly, you know. But no, this basically covers it all. We're going to be talking about sequencing here. Hopefully this won't go too long. It's a little chaotic. I'm kind of all over the place on this one. But I've got a method to talk about this that isolates some of the moving parts that goes on with this whole sequencing thing. So this is an idea suggested by Jason Pollock, who wrote on our Facebook page. I promise I will not bombard this group with suggestions. I'll refrain from making any others for a while, but for the heck of it, I'll throw this one out there: albums that suffer from poor sequencing. So that's a little more specific and general than we're going to talk about here. But as he goes on, so records where the batch of songs themselves are good, but the track order kind of diminishes the potential impact. Sequencing can be very important when putting together an album. I've had this thought many times. I wouldn't put those songs back to back like that. So we're actually not going to address some of what is in there, because like I say, I'm isolating the parts here. You'll see the method to my madness in a second. But he says, for instance, Night Ranger, a truly great rock band, released their comeback album in 1997 and opened up with a ballad, Terrible Choice. We are going to kind of look at that. To give you another example, Jafria's album Silk and Steel was kind of a bizarre experiment in making one side all ballads, other side all rockers. We'll kind of get to a bit of that as well. So albums that suffered from poor sequencing, I Shall Retreat to My Corner. Later on, he said, when I engaged with him a little bit, whenever there are two songs back-to-back in the same groove and key, it drives me crazy. The first and last songs in the album are obviously important, but I feel the second song is equally important in trying to mix up lyrical matter, chord structures. Okay, this is all good stuff, Jason, but we're not going to be looking at the intra between these. We're basically going to be looking at what I've done here is I'm isolating this to, okay, so our examples are going to be big bands we all know, so we can all sort of understand what's going on. I'm also isolating it to vinyl at this point because I got so much to talk about. I almost don't want to get into CDs, but maybe that could be a whole separate episode. I don't know. But as you've touched upon here, I'm going to take a look at this in five parts, because this is called History in Five Songs. So what we're going to look at is the area of side one, track one, the second song, side one, the end of the side, side two, the first song, and the end of the entire album. So that's how we're going to go into this. But yeah, just a couple of things I wanted to touch on. Well, let's finish off what Jason says here. The more I thought about it, the more maybe it's not a good idea. You'd have to be talking about, okay, that's getting into the stuff about needing all us to understand what these examples are. So I've hopefully done that pretty good. And to a point, it is subjective thing in a way, but isn't all of this kind of subjective? That touches upon a point that You know, okay, so we're not going to be talking about good sequencing in terms of entire albums, because those albums come out, they're thought about, they are, you know, somebody did take a look at the sequencing, and this is the sequencing, so we know. So it's kind of a weird philosophical thing that this is, we're looking at hypotheticals that don't happen, or actually in a way we're looking at examples that we are agreeing or disagreeing with on a individual basis. But I guess my point is, well, here's sort of more about the point. The number of permutations. So I kind of looked this up on the net. If you have 10 songs, there's something like 3,628,800 permutations of ways to sequence. So this is, again, why it's all very subjective. If there's 9, it's much less. It's about a tenth, 362,880,000. I don't know if these numbers are exactly right. It's hard to kind of look this up. 8, it exponentially goes down again to about 40,000 kind of thing. So whether those numbers are right or not, there's a lot of permutations to the way to sequence something. So it kind of gets sort of stupid to sort of try to, you know, to pick a sequencing of all the tracks sort of thing. Suffice to say, in most cases, they do a really good job. And then inside of each album, there's one or two things you might disagree with. You know, and I looked at Reddit a little bit as well. There are some good sequencing discussions there. And one thing that was brought up a few times was that in the vinyl days, as you got closer to the middle of the album, the grooves are going to be closer together and they're turning around at more of an angle. So you didn't want a bunch of your loud stuff there to stop the needle skipping out of the groove. So that's why you will find, apparently for technological reasons, a lot of your lighter songs towards the end of side one or the end of side two. So that's where you can put in that sort of stuff. And I just wanted to make another point about vinyl versus CD. Sequencing matters even more, I think, in an abstract way when you can actually see it. When you can actually look at the vinyl and tell, you know, what's dark, what's light, what's heavy, whatever, and you can see the lengths of the songs. So I think it's almost more important even because there is a visual aspect to vinyl. But people talked about on Reddit as well, they talked about different keys. Let's see, what can we pick out here? Before CDs and cassette tapes took over the world, albums had to fit in the inherent limitations of vinyl record due to physical limitations. Record will lose information as it moves through the grooves towards the center, meaning softer songs would often be placed at the end of a side. That's a lot of crowd-pleasing ballads from the 80s were also always the last song on side A kind of thing. Let's see, some material works in the context of an album, not filler, but sleepers, deep cuts, or connective tissue. I think this kind of material is really important to the album experience. I think ideally you'd kick off an album with two or three tracks that encompass what you're about, are easily digestible, and act as a statement. See, here's another thing. As we get into side one, first track, people have sort of said things like sets the mood of the album. Well, that's not really true. I mean, often it's the fast rocker, right? So it's not exactly the mood of the album. It's the heaviest thing on the album. So it's not even really true in that respect. So, okay, so I won't go over a bunch more of these notes here. Let's get into it and let's look at my method. So again, to isolate the moving parts, I've got five positions on a vinyl LP to match with our five songs idea. The first category is side one, track one, and every one that I'm going to pick here, just to be a little naughty, is going to be a bad example of what we're talking about here. So take a listen to our first track here. This is Van Halen with You're No Good.
Feeling better now that we're through. Feeling better, baby.
Okay, so the idea is Van Halen 2 opens with this. It's almost like they're ambling or stumbling into the room with a hangover, and they do this cover of this kind of dopey song, you know, made famous by Linda Ronstadt. Weird, weird way to start an album. It's always one I think of all the time when I think of sequencing kind of mistakes, side one, track ones. Because it's usually, what are some characteristics of this? Sometimes you would front load. You want maybe your best song at the very beginning or soon on an album. So this is the idea of front loading of CDs in the 90s. You would maybe want a loud, heavy, fast one to get the party started kind of thing. So, you know, it's a little bit like the story of a concert, right? So some other bad examples. And then I've kind of, when I started this process, I tried to keep the band sort of in sync, and then it sort of started falling apart because it took me a really long time to do this. This is probably one of the episodes that took me the longest to do. Okay, so other bad examples of sequencing a song at side one, track one. Agree with me if you like or disagree, but Van Halen, Diver Down starts with Where Have All the Good Times Gone, which is kind of not all that exciting, and it's a cover again, and it's just not really showy or flashy. Van Halen, A Different Kind of Truth, everybody complained about Tattoo being the first song on there because a lot of people think it's their least favorite song on it, and it's kind of relaxed. David Lee Roth, Yankee Rose to kick off Eat 'Em and Smile, and Knuckle Bones to kick off Skyscraper. Good examples of sequencing a song here, sticking with Van Halen, we got Running with the Devil. Now, why is this a good one? It's got that reverse, that car siren thing, and then the bass, so it's got a dramatic opening. That's another thing you might want to do with a track one, is have some super interesting sounds to grab your attention. But I think it's kind of brave doing a song that's a little slow like this. So it's like, who is this band? They're kind of breaking a lot of rules here. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Women and Children First starts with And the Cradle Will Rock, which I think is the most professional, well-put-together song on that album. So that's a good one, and it was a single. Fair Warning starts with Mean Street, which is considered the greatest Van Halen song. And Van Halen 1984 starts with 1984, right? So there's the idea of starting an album with, a fanfare, a bunch of instrumental pomp and pageantry sort of thing. And then, of course, goes into Jump, which is also a great way to open an album with that, you know, iconic synth line. Keeping it in that world, Sammy Hagar, I Can't Drive 55. Great way to start that album off. Get the party started, right? Honorable mention, bad openers. Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast, Invaders. Everybody complains about that one just not being a great song. Didn't play it live. Weird opener of an entire album. Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, Moonchild. I don't think Volume 4 opens that great with Wheels of Confusion, The Straightener. I don't think Judas Priest Rock-A-Rolla starts that great with the sort of galumphing One for the Road. I don't think Rainbow Down to Earth, which I love, starts all that great with All Night Long, kind of like a flouncing around, thrashing around sort of song. AC/DC Rising Power is a very slow opener for Flick of the Switch. And for those about to rock, we salute you. It sounds just too epic and large. It should be later, and I don't know. It's kind of a weird, low-energy song to start. People always complained about Thin Lizzy Fighting, starting with Rosalie. Bad Reputation, starting with Soldier Fortune. I don't think it's that great. ZZ Top Tejas, starting with It's Only Love, is a little low-energy. Honorable Good Openers. There's many, 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 so that's kind of pointless, but let's just go through them quickly. Killers, Iron Maiden starts with Ides of March, so pomp and pageantry. Where Eagles Dare introduces us to Nico McBrain with that drum fill and a very, you know, triumphant sounding metal song. Heaven and Hell, Black Sabbath starts with Neon Nights. Just a great anthemic up-tempo song. So up-tempo is a big theme in hard rock, of course. They do War Pigs. Never Say Die starts with Never Say Die. High energy. Backstreet Kids, Technical Ecstasy, high energy. Hole in the Sky, big heavy one for Sabotage. Judas Priest, Turbo Lover. So here you have an ersatz title track, very dramatic kind of opening to the song, gets going in a cool way, picks up, so it's just a well put together classy song to start off an album. And that again speaks to your front loading, the whole idea of you want your best foot first, because you never know how long people are going to stick around with an album, so that's kind of good to get that started. All right, there you go. There's side one, track one. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. All right, back again. History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, episode 224, Sequencing. Take a listen to this and we shall discuss. This is Judas Priest again with Don't Go. Okay, so our category here is the second track on an album. Now, what is it all about the second track? So the second track is kind of a place where they often will put a hit. They'll often put a single. It is soon. It's an important spot. It's kind of like we're into the album now. We want to show you something different from the first one. So that's a big thing about sequencing period is that you want this to flow like a concert, have changes, ebbs and flows, go up, go down, all that sort of thing. So you definitely don't want to have the same sort of thing going on as the opening track, and that doesn't here. But to be naughty again, I think this is a bad example. Don't Go is a pretty low energy track. They floated it as a single. What it didn't do anything as a single. It's just not that dynamic. There's barely any beat to the thing. It's a weird song to put in the second position. This is your follow-up album to British Steel. You know, you really gotta, you know, you gotta lash out and show that you're gonna do an even bigger album. And of course, we know this wasn't that big an album after British Steel. Some other bad examples. Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast, Children of the Damned. In the Facebook page, people complained about that because it was a little low energy to have this dark, dirgy sort of balladic thing, ballad happening. Second track on the album, first album with Bruce Dickinson. Peace of Mind, Revelations does kind of the same thing. Black Sabbath, Technical Ecstasy with You Won't Change Me kind of does the same thing. Black Sabbath, Seventh Star, No Stranger to Love kind of does the same thing. So, yeah, the second position, you usually want something pretty energetic there, and it's not really time to go into anything that's going to be a little ponderous. Also bad, I think, Led Zeppelin, Babe, I'm Going to Leave You, you know, right at the beginning is a little mellow for a second track on your very first album. And even Friends, I love Friends to death. It's one of my favorite Zeppelin songs, but on Led Zeppelin 3, to have that show up as the second track, very weird. Thin Lizzy, Fighting for Those About to Live, again, a little subdued. Good examples of putting a song second. So Sad Wings of Destiny kicks off with Victim of Changes, big epic, kind of weird. It's got some pros and cons of being a first track, but the Ripper with that whole intro going on, it's a short song. It really gets to the point. It really shows that, okay, if you didn't think there was enough energy with Victim of Changes, we're definitely going to give it to you with the Ripper. Screaming for Vengeance, technically the second track is Electric Eyes. So technically the second track is the very best song on the album. It's the masterpiece, the classic. So that's cool. And that album opens with a fanfare. So that's a great second track. Judas Priest, Rock-A-Rolla opens with the song. The second song is the title track, Rock-A-Rolla. It's the most commercial sounding song. So that's good. Iron Maiden, Killers, again, exactly the same as Electric Eye. You get this amazing song with this. Here you get this great bass line and drum opening, which is really cool. So after a fanfare. And sticking with Maiden, Power Slave, 2 Minutes to Midnight, probably the most accessible rock and rollsy song, hit you right between the eyes, different from Aces High. Just a kind of cool change up in what's going on there. All right, item number three, position number three, side one, last track of the album. Take a listen to this. This is Rush with Limelight. Okay, so why do I think this is a bad example? Because I really think that this song sounds like it could have, maybe should have closed the entire album with that big, dramatic closing section there, the jamming thing. It's so emotional. It just seems like side one last track is not good enough for it. So that's why I didn't like it here. I just think it's just so impactful and such an important song. For that reason, it could have gone at the end, but it also could have gone in other positions because it's also very commercial and melodic as well. So it just seems like a weird place for it. I always consider this position a little bit of a spooky, dark spot, place for kind of a badass spot, end of side one. It's like the end, but not the real end kind of thing. Kind of a weird one. A couple other bad examples I didn't like is I don't like Bright Light Fright at the end of side one of Aerosmith Draw the Line. It's just a weird thing to put this heavy, punky song at the end of the side like that. And it goes against our vinyl things that we talked about earlier. Judas Priest Stained Class. Invader. Invader's not the biggest, most known Judas Priest song, but I put it here because I really feel like this would have been a great place for Beyond the Realms of Death. And it's such a badass song that I don't think I want it at the end of the entire album because it stands out too differently. I think it would have been perfect at the end of side one. Rush Rush, Here Again. It feels too final to be at the end of side one rather than side two. It feels like the leave the concert, the chill out song. And it just feels like a goodbye kind of thing, right? Whereas you've got Working Man, which kind of works as well. But maybe those two switched would have been kind of better, I think. Judas Priest, Hellbent for Leather. This is interesting how you got Take on the World and United. So you've got the big national anthems of these two albums. The big, you know, metal, let's get together, goodbye, whatever. But it just feels like the national anthem is something you say at the end of an event. And I think... or sing at the end of an event. And I think Take on the World and United feel better at the end of the entire album, which Judas Priest does later on when they do these kinds of songs, rather than at the end of side one. Also, I don't like Gates of Babylon here either, although it's kind of going a little against what I was saying. It is a badass position for an epic to be, the end of side one, but it's almost such an important song. It's the masterpiece of the album. It's their Stairway to Heaven. I almost think it should have been beginning of side two or end of the entire album. I don't think Stairway to Heaven, for the same reason, is weird at the end of side one. That should have been, I think, the end of side two. And The Crunge, for a totally different reason, it's too flippant to be in this position. It should be in the middle somewhere. Good examples of sequencing a song at the side one last track position, Scorpion's Love Drive with Coast to Coast. I think this is a perfectly good place to put an instrumental, and I think it's a perfectly good place to put a ballad. So Lady Starlight by them as well. Rush Fly by Night ends with By Tor and the Snow Dog here. I think that's a good position for that one. It's epic enough, but it doesn't need to close the album. Led Zeppelin ends with Dazed and Confused at the end of side one. That's pretty good. AC/DC Power Age. I always like Riff Raff in this position because it's got a big jam to it. So it's rocking, it's a jam. AC/DC is kind of a funny one with these ones. Thin Lizzy, Thunder and Lightning, The Holy War, I think fits pretty well here, and it could have been at the end of side two as well, because it's pretty imposing, right? But again, the badass position, the semi-epic position, I think this is it. Okay, let's move on to number four. Take a listen to this. This is Aerosmith with Kings and Queens. Okay, so we're at side two, track one. I've never liked this song in this position on this album. Something about it just rubs me the wrong way, period. I know I've talked about it before, how this is not the type of song this band generally does, and it's not very believable for them, even though it's a cool song and everybody likes it. But given what it is, a big ponderous ballad, side one on an Aerosmith album, even though it's side two, doesn't seem to make sense for me. So they're putting it there because they feel it's an important song. I don't know. It just doesn't go with Aerosmith that well. So a couple other ones that I feel are bad is getting Kill the King as side two, track one. I think that's such an amazing, amazing rainbow song that it should have replaced the slightly weaker Long Live Rock and Roll. So Kill the King should have been side one, track one, instead of side two. Rainbow Down to Earth begins with the... Head East cover or Russ Ballard cover, sorry, Since You've Been Gone. I feel that's just way too lightweight to start a side of a Rainbow album. Van Halen, Jamie's Crying. I never thought that song was that impressive enough to be a side opener. They should have put maybe one of their more heavy metal songs there. They buried the super heavy metal songs kind of all over the place, right? So they didn't do that on this album, which is kind of weird. But yeah, I think it's just a little bit too casual a song to put as a side opener. And then at the other end, Loss of Control, Van Halen, they opened a side two of This Is Women and Children First with that, and I think it's just too chaotic and weird and casual and not put together. It just sounds... This is a flagship position, and it shouldn't have a song like that. Some other bad examples, I think, are Johnny the Fox with Johnny the Fox Meets Jimmy the Weed. Just too funky for a side opener. Good examples of sequencing a song here, I think Screaming for Vengeance on Screaming for Vengeance works good here. Stargazer, you know, Rainbow Rising just seems perfect and, you know, mathematical and geometrical. So it seems like a good place to put that. You got the 2 8-minute songs together. Carousel Ombra is big and epic enough on In Through the Outdoor. I think it fits here. Unchained Van Halen. So, you know, that album, both sides open with two of the greatest Van Halen songs of all time, so that's fine. And The Boys Are Back in Town, Thin Lizzy. I don't know. I'm a little ambivalent about that one. I think it's pretty cool. I mean, Jailbreak is, I think, even a better album opener for those guys on the Jailbreak album. Okay, so now we are up to our last position here. Let's see. Have we done all these? Side one, two, track one. Yeah, I guess we've done them all. So take a listen to this. This is Led Zeppelin with The Ocean. Got more time. Okay, so we are up into side two, last track. So closing track of an album. I don't like The Ocean here. It's too short. It's too flippant. It's too fun. It just doesn't feel like this is a big, serious, cool band. I don't think it should be the last track on the album. This is where you put your biggest epic. It could be a mellow song. It could be something with a bunch of movements to it. It could be a long song. Some other ones that I don't like here. Never liked Devil's Child off of Screaming for Vengeance in this position. This is a happy party hair metal song. It's just a weird song to put as the last song on an album. Call of Cthulhu, Metallica. So here we've got, I believe, an instrumental belongs as the last song on side one, but not the last song on side two. It sounds like your singer had to like leave early and go home. So it sounds like a leftover, like you ran out of ideas. And at the end of this album, you've got an instrumental. Richie Blackmore's Rainbow, same kind of thing. It's even worse. It's Still I'm Sad. It's a Yardbirds cover of an instrumental at the end. And Rainbow Down to Earth, Lost in Hollywood. You know, I think it's the greatest Rainbow song of all time. To have it buried way at the end of the album and be this really cool, disciplined, heavy song just doesn't make sense to me. Also bad, I think, having Led Zeppelin 3 end with Hats Off to Roy Harper. Everybody complains about that song, but it sounds like filler. And when you put filler as the last song in your album, it really gives that impression that you ran out of ideas in real time kind of thing, right? Sick Again. To have Sick Again end this monumental Physical Graffiti seems like a little bit of a wasted opportunity as well. It's just a good rockin' song. Although it's got a good jam, right? Anything with a good jam, feels like you're jamming out at the end. It's the end of a concert, so it kind of makes sense for that reason. Also bad, I think... Van Halen, One Foot Out the Door. So having this synth-based song as your last one in a simple rhyme is kind of just fillerish and not great for a last song. Thin Lizzy, Fighting, Ballad of a Hard Man. Not crazy about that as a closer. Too heavy. Boogie Woogie Dance, too heavy again. Short rockin' songs. ZZ Top, Tush, believe it or not, is the last song on Fandango. It's kind of weird. Party on the Patio for those guys. Bad Girl, Delirious, Double Back. So they got a lot of songs that are just standard party rock and ZZ Top songs. Last song on an album doesn't make sense to me. Good examples of a song as the last song on an album, I'm Gonna Crawl, Led Zeppelin, In Through the Outdoor. I think it's cool that they close out this album. They didn't know it would be their last album, but it's cool that they close out with a chill-out track, a mellow, send you off into the night, you know, at the end of the concert, so you don't, you know, riot and wreck the place with this kind of slow blues. Kind of cool. Same thing with AC/DC, Highway to Hell with Night Prowler. Lynyrd Skynyrd, Freebird. I mean, there's a perfect example of it's a ballad, it's long, it's a jam, it's a super important song. Yeah, last song on an album. Van Halen, Happy Trails. The idea of having a true closing goodbye. You know, a short little comedy track, send you off on a happy note, smile on your face, but it's literally a goodbye song. Thin Lizzy, Dear Lord, I think works. On Bad Reputation, It's Getting Dangerous on Renegade works. Heart Attack. Heart Attack is a poignant one because we've got that whole episode about last songs ever. But in terms of music, I think the music's a little too heavy for a closing track. You know what? This has been a long episode. I'm not going to go into some of these other concepts here because maybe we can talk about CDs at some point in terms of all this as well. I think I threw a lot of information at you. But yeah, that was one way of looking at it is those key positions. And like we say, vinyl has a lot of key positions because it's got the two separate sides. And like I say, you can kind of see it, right? It's a visual thing as well. So let's just leave it at that for this episode. If you like this show and want to support future episodes, please go to ko-fi.com/martinpopoff. Hit that red support button. Buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Joe Becht, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, Lee Clifford, Daryl Oon, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, Jason Pollock, and Steve Polari. Thank you all very much. The book situation with the Kiss book, a bit of drama there. They sold out the first print. You can still order from me. That means you'll get one of the second pressing, which I will have in hand late November. I'm already building up a lot of orders for that. But I still have the Who book. I still have the Bluish Occult, which is doing great guns, and people love that book. So all of that is at martinpopoff.com. Hope you enjoyed this sequencing episode. I'm not, you know what? I'm going to give you a little bit of homework here. What was the one I wanted to talk about that I didn't talk about? I can't remember. Anyways, go play a little bit of, boy, what do we go with here? You know what? I'm going to say Judas Priest Turbo Lover. Man, that is such a well-put-together song. I've just been talking with Andy, of course. He had a really cool treatise. I think it was Andy who mentioned how well-put-together that song was. Sean Kelly might have mentioned it as well. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. That could be a whole episode at some point. This idea of what makes great songwriting. And that is a great example of great songwriting. And that's why that song has endured. And they play it live, right? Which is pretty cool. So go play some Judas Priest, Turbo Lover. Head over to the Facebook page and bring up some other concepts you want to talk about in terms of sequencing. But yeah, you know what? I've left out a lot of stuff, so there might be another episode. Talk to you later.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.